This is episode 1 of Rackadex After Hours.
Hello everyone, this is the Rackadex After Hours podcast. Essentially the premise of this is that we are in the pub after work. And my name's Peter.
I'm Ben.
I'm Andy.
And we are going to generally be talking about music, hardware, software and...
everything in between.
Well, there'll be pop culture, there'll be science as well. I'm looking forward to the science-ier episodes later on.
So, we've survived Black Friday.
Yeah, just about.
So,
by the skin of our teeth, we made it.
Taking a different opposed thing, have either of you actually made any Black Friday purchases at all?
Well, myself, I've got absolutely nothing on the radar. I've just been trying to avoid it, because obviously there's so much stuff going on Amazon. I've just...
Yeah.
Keep me away.
Yeah, I'm just harassed by emails and stuff like that.
Oh, the plug-in bundles and things.
Plug-in bundles, everything else as well. Amazon, it makes you realise all of the stuff that you don't need, but you desperately want. That's the issue.
Oh, the Fab Filter collection.
I was thinking a TV.
Okay. different lines.
Yeah, so obviously everyone is literally bombarded with all the mails from, as you say, from all the software vendors, the hardware vendors, the retailers. I mean, it's just...
it's non-stop.
It's suffocating. And yeah. We're nearly through it.
Did you get a weird Black Friday request today, Pete? Or did you have anything? Because my day was pretty odd, but nothing... nothing totally... is this completely unreasonable request today? Either you get anything odd happening?
No, I mean, I've had people mentioning Black Friday for the last couple of weeks in respect to the usual request. Is this going to be cheaper than Black Friday? Yes. And invariably my answer is no, it's not.
I don't know.
Yeah. Or you know. So, but you guys have not purchased anything yourselves?
Nah.
No. Okay. No, I was very sorely tempted by some plugins, but other than that...
I did look at the Fab Filter.
Oh, the Fab Filter is actually, irritatingly, that's one that I could do with investing in a little bit more. I'm on Q2. I kind of want to move up to Q3.
Yeah. But
I've got a selection, but I'm so selective with sort of plugins and soft synths and things like that anyway. Mm. So I think I'm Pro C...
that's a good one.
The Volcano.
I just think the trouble is with it is the temptation to obviously get new things. And half the time, I don't know how they work. Or I do understand it in like the basic capacity, but you know, it's just then another thing to learn. And like especially with the FabFilter stuff, how in-depth it goes into it, that is at least a day of my life taken out to trying to work out right. Okay, how do I do this? Am I going to use mid-side? And how's that interact? How different is it from the other plugin? Is it just a question of the algorithm that's changed up for it? Or is it going to be slightly different from like a GUI perspective, that kind of thing? So, yeah, I'm pretty happy with kind of where I am.
I think the main thing if you go for Q3 is the dynamic EQ stuff that they brought in.
Oh, okay.
That's the big,
big
selling point. Basically, it's multi-band dynamic EQ type stuff. Okay. I mean, so you've got... essentially each EQ band will be like a bit of multiband compressor, but rather than just filtering out, it's because on a multiband compressor, isn't it normally just it picks that set of frequencies to compress, or is it detecting a different set of frequencies for compression?
I think it depends which one you use and how you use it.
Ah,
it's usually
complicated.
When it gets to that certain threshold, it then either squashes it or it can reduce it or however you kind of set it to work. And again, it does depend on what multiband you are using.
Fair.
But yeah, I've tried my best not to look up any of these things. Otherwise, I will get tempted with it, which is what I'm trying to avoid.
Okay, well, the only thing I purchased, which is nothing to do with music or music hardware, was a 500 milligrams of Manuka honey.
Wait, that was a Black Friday deal?
Yeah, that was a Black Friday deal.
Not bad. I always associate it with kind of technology. I don't know if that's just because where I am. But
yeah, no, I think it usually is. Usually everything that I see is like TVs and...
Man, I was looking in all the wrong places.
Literally every retailer now is drawn into it.
Nowadays, they can't not, it really is.
Yeah, I mean, it's just right across the retail landscape completely. It's just everybody is just looking. And
apart from Primark, which is the only one I actually needed.
But, I mean, I see it's the beginning of what used to be the January sales, and then those January sales started at sort of before Christmas because... Mm. You know, they needed to try and get those sales in to and sort of capitalize on people buying for Christmas presents, and now that's slid all the way to the sort of beginning of December with Black Friday.
I was talking to someone about this, so it really kind of defeats the object because, you know, I mean, I understand like from the point of view of like, right, you can save a little bit of money to do your Christmas shopping and that kind of thing. Because I am a fiend if I can leave it until I'm the guy among many guys.
The last minute man.
Yeah, 100%. Oh, Reading High Street. I see. We see each other. We nod. Yep, you're right. You left it late again, haven't you? Yeah, I have done. But to be fair, paycheck comes in. So, you know. But with the Black Friday thing, it just kind of defeats the whole object of the January sale and stuff like that. That being said, I was looking into an article I don't know about. Like, you know, with this, I'll have to try and fact check it. I think it was on the BBC, but I'll double check. It was just to do with how, you know, the months prior to Black Friday and the January sales, the inflation of the price of goods slowly starts trickling up. So even when they're offering, you know, 50%, 20% off something, you would be paying for it in summer is basically what it comes down to. But no one remembers summer, right?
Yeah.
So we're there. Or it's just a decent excuse to get rid of stuff that, you know.
Well, I think that's one of the main reasons we have to admit that's, you know, it's to get, you know, B stock gone, sort of not slow selling lines.
Yeah,
and get cash flow going a bit. Those type of things.
But yeah. I mean, the only thing I'd say is it's good for the high street, right? That's the, like, I mean, obviously, I know that you've got Amazon and stuff like that, which is, you know, definitely a thing. But, you know, when you get to sort of Black Friday or, you know, this current time where we're at, the weekend after Black Friday, I think a lot more people are kind of inclined to go outside and shop because so many of, even, you know, it's not just the big companies like Amazon that are doing the deals. Most people are kind of getting on board with it. And, you know, from that perspective, going into that retailer on the street, the chances are they might have something for sale, which you can, you know, then use to, you know, get people out and shopping and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, certainly the high street needs it. The direction it's going.
It's suffering around here, isn't it?
Yeah,
lots of empty boxes.
We're in a pretty affluent area, so it must be even worse in other areas. But that's the nature of the modern world we live in.
Isn't it just?
Okay, so shall we talk about what's been announced this week things that have been announced? Because there has been a bit of a tsunami of announcements.
Yeah, it's a bit of a synth-heavy episode, this one, so I hope you're on board with that. Before we jump into the kind of announcements, because a lot of this, actually, we're going to be talking about the B word, the old Behringer or Behringer, however you want to pronounce it. What I thought I'd do, because I knew we were going to be talking about this, is just check... Since they've been kind of prolific, be going, oh, we're going to make this. Oh, what about this? We've probably patented this now, even though we didn't invent the thing. What I've got here is a little tally of what I can remember what we've got in terms of things that have been released and then all the teasers that they've been chucking out there. So in kind of the teaser list, stuff that we've got to look forward to eventually, some nebulous time in the future, we've got ARP Quadra, which... personally I'm quite excited for because there's some Genesis connotations there, so I want to be in there. CS80, we'll all have seen that because I think they were working on Polyphonic Aftertouch keyboard for it. I think that's where I think the first thing that sort of leaked in inverted commas, and then everyone goes, oh, obviously, yep, they're going to do a CS80. So there's that. There's the Wasp, which we'll move on to in a bit, which is pretty much confirmed at this point, the TR-909 OBXA, and then there's actually a very, very small mention of a Lindrum in there as well, I'm all over.
I love that one. Thing.
It's in like one YouTube video somewhere.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
yeah,
so
no,
I think
I might have
they were doing something with like Thriller because I'm pretty sure there was a Lindrum on Thriller. But yeah,
between the 909 and the TD3, which has been announced, I think, but we're just waiting on
TD3. We're just waiting for that to turn up
get
at retailers.
The old acid
wait,
house
no, no,
going.
It's already shipping from Thomann.
Is it?
Yeah. One of my buddies has one already. So he, well, don't know if he has it, but it's shipped. He's got that notification. So that's basically with us. But then if we go back through the history, we've got the Behringer Model D. That's here. The Behringer Odyssey, that's done. K2, which is the MS-20, that's done. Pro 1 is nearly here, maybe. Obviously, the vocoder, the VC340, that's out. SH-101, RD-8, and the TD3, and then the Wasp, which is imminent. I don't think I've missed anything.
DeepMind?
DeepMind, well, that wasn't like an official clone. Obviously, it's very Juno-y.
Yeah.
But I don't know, because I wasn't really into synths when it was released. Were there any of these kind of bits where they went, ooh, they're going after the Juno?
So evident, but there was in the sort of publicity stuff and the sort of preamble that leading up to it when the thing was developed and they were sort of showing prototypes around and there was generally trying to build up a bit of a hubbub about it. There was definitely the inference that it was Juno-esque. And it clearly is.
Yeah. Well, that's where they've taken architecture and sound.
They haven't included the sort of one of the things, but certainly the 106 was famous for, was for the chorus, and that's not present there, but it's got other quite a considerable amount of other aspects that takes it beyond the Juno. And this is what I like with some of the more radical stuff. So some of the stuff is well, as they term it, a tribute. You're not allowed to say it's a copy.
That's it. Yeah. Oh, well, there's the Poly D, which is actually a paraphonic synth, so they could have called it the Parody. But yeah, it's that tribute is the word.
I mean, I don't know about you guys, but the interesting thing, just with all the sort of announcements and stuff like that, I kind of touched on it, but, you know, when you've got things like the iconic synths, like the, especially the genre-defining synths, when you've got stuff like the, you know, the TD3,
absolutely,
your 909, right, that is acid house, right? I mean, do you guys think that through that you'll see a resurgence of the genre? Because to me, the thing that I noticed was, you know, a lot of these things like your 808s, 909s, TD3s, you know, originally those were the things that people couldn't sell, or you'd find them in a skip, right? Or some kind
of... long time ago. We're
talking way back, but that was how, you know, it was people that couldn't afford to get these super high-end stuff.
Yeah, there was the sort of producers that were sort of with real low budgets were just getting hold of this stuff and seeing what they could do with it.
And you think that's almost coming full circle now, because if you look at some of these like classic things, like, I mean, how much will an 808 set you back these days? Certainly a Juno. I know that's going for, you know, $1,500 for a decent one.
That's one of the more affordable ones.
Yeah, that's
ones
one of
around.
The more affordable ones. So I just wonder, you know, whether or not, you know, give it 6 months, a year by the time they've done this stuff, whether or not people either find a resurgence in that kind of music.
Because the affordability, obviously there's plugins that
really
can do it.
That's part about it.
So with the plugin emulation stuff, obviously people that will want to make that genre will make it. I think it would be more likely to reappear in the live world, possibly.
I definitely think the live world, but I think that, you know, the thing that I would say, and I definitely agree, like with the way samples and things like that are going these days, you certainly can emulate it. You know, I mean, on a very slight tangent, but with like Universal Audio, for example, I've had the luxury of being able to play the Universal Audio against the equivalent, and it is very difficult to tell the difference. I mean, obviously certain, you know, units have their own sound because they're hand soldered and, you know, they've got their own flavor to it, however minute. The thing that I would say that really makes a difference when it comes to all of this stuff versus the plugins, and I think it's, you know, a whole wide thing, excuse me, it's the way you use them and it's the way that you interact with them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, something like the 808, fine, you can dot that in on a MIDI channel in Logic, but you're not necessarily using it in the same way.
Yeah, you're
same
not
as
subscribing
like,
to the limitations of the
original
hardware.
Yeah, and that's the real cool thing, I think, about them is it's the limitations of it and how you can use it and how you interact with it. And that, I think, is what really defines, to a degree, things like the genre and stuff like that, because you are limited to it, because you've got the budget, you're limited to that kind of thing, and you're limited to use it in the way that you can use it. Whereas with the plugins and stuff like that, you know, if you wanted to, you could take something like a Moog Model D. I'm sure there's a way you could make it poly or something like that, as opposed to mono.
Yeah, just a lot of multi-tracking.
Would it work? I don't know. Like, it's the same kind of thing, I think, when it comes to stuff like the 808. I've, you know, got, I think pretty much everyone that's into music has probably got an 808 sample pack.
Oh, absolutely. But, there's so many free ones.
Yeah, but are you going to use it in that same way to kind of give you that? And that's where I wonder whether or not the genre resurgence will kind of come back, or, you know, hopefully new genres as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
It'll be really interesting to see because, you know, I think the big thing that we said, Pete, was when that Model D first came out, which was when the I certainly first became aware of the Behringer stuff and how they were kind of cloning it. We were quite lucky because in the certain retailer that we worked at, we had the reissue Model D and we had
Behringer at the same time.
And we
yeah.
literally got to try them out side by side. I couldn't really tell the difference, like personally. I don't think there's, you know, a huge one in it. But how much was the Model D?
It was close to $4,000 at the time, and
then the Model D was
$4,000,
$350 for the Behringer. Yeah. And we were saying, it'd be rude not to, you know. you know what I mean? Like, oh, they've done a Model D that sounds pretty much the same as certainly the reissue, and you know, being able to try them out side by side, I certainly subscribe to that. So.
Well, put it this way, we had a representative from the brand that begins with M and absolutely refused to have the Behringer copy it kind of in the same room as it. It was like, cause obviously they're, I don't want to say threatened by it, but
they
recognize that
it's so
close in terms of the sound.
You know, if it were me, I'd be worried about it. Roland obviously are because, mm-hmm. you know, certain products that I'm thinking of, the SH-101 is now the SH-1.
Yeah.
You know?
Legal fists flew.
Yeah,
on that,
legal fists flew. And, you know, they should be worried about it. Yeah, I'm not going to go into a Roland saga at the moment, but...
I think they've definitely shot a lot of other manufacturers' foxes, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, they've... I applaud what they're doing because they are making quite a massive variety of instruments available at sort of unbelievably
humans.
Inexpensive prices. Well, so
thing.
it's going to allow a lot of people to access this equipment. So I think it's... I like it. I mean, yeah. I don't think you... I mean, I know some people are a bit sniffy. Oh, it's Behringer and all this sort of stuff. But
I was initially as well, to be fair. When they first came in, I was like, what's going to go wrong? What's going to go wrong? And to be fair, there have been issues. Don't get me wrong. Certainly with some of them, there have been. But they seem certainly few and far between from what I was expecting. But
considering the numbers that they've moved.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But we see issues with really high end manufacturers. And it, you know. Yeah.
No, sorry.
Let's not go there.
Let's not name names.
But, it's what I find so astounding by the whole thing is literally, as we said earlier, the tsunami of releases. It's just every other week, right? Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
it's just
every other week.
It just seems to be. I mean, no, there's no way of actually understanding how much planning has gone into this and how long they've been thinking about these various things. But they're just going to be coming quicker and quicker now. Mm. I mean, what are they not going to produce? I mean, you know, when are they going to be coming out with a Jupiter 8? When are they going to be coming out with Jupiter 6?
Well, I think the thing, and I'm surprised that so many people will, you know, seem as gobsmacked as they are. The whole trend in maybe the last 7 to 10 years, maybe you could even throw it back further than that, is the democratization of music. It used to be that you'd have to, you know, pay X amount of money to go into the studio and they might have the synths that you'd be able to use. Or, you know, if you're particularly fortunate, you might have decided to purchase them yourselves. But the way things have shifted, you know, with these really affordable, really, really decent interfaces and stuff like that, there's no reason that you can't start to put together at least what I would say would be really decent demos. If you start learning your stuff, really good music. There are so many people that have great tracks that have done it all at home, and that's really cool. But it was only a matter of time, I think, before synthesizers and stuff like that came into it, especially with the whole analog resurgence that everyone kind of underwent. It was only a matter of time before that happened. And it's just it seems to be the trend with everything is democratization. Everyone is kind of being able to get into it. Now, don't get me wrong, £300 is still a lot of money, especially if you're, you know, broke. But it's something to work toward. It's not, it's £300.
It's achievable.
£3,000.
It's realistically achievable.
Yeah. It's no longer an aspiration.
I'm always slightly questioned by the original manufacturers of these tributes didn't re-release them in some respect. I suspect they've looked at it in a sort of a business framework and just thought it wasn't economically viable for them. But I think they've kind of missed a trick.
I think they really have done as well. There's a specific brand that comes to mind where it's like you look at some of the things that they're doing and they just seem to be playing off the name of the products that they had. They just seem to be playing off their heritage.
Well, you're absolutely talking about Roland. We've just got to go there. Because what we had with the most recent release from them, was it the most recent? Either way, JU06A, Juno kind of thing, the little boutique module, which is a four voice. All the Junos were six. And then, obviously, all the people are going, why didn't you make it a six voice? How hard can it be? It's a digital box. And we have a word from the UK Roland Synth specialist, where obviously they took the feedback back to Japan, the product designers there, and what they basically said was just enjoy what you've got. Basically, because
you know the thing that really, really hacks me off though? I really like the idea of the boutiques and stuff like that, to have it in that thing. But what really, really irritates me is the Roland Cloud. And I know I'm going to sound like I'm going back on myself, and to a degree I am. It should be about the way that you use these things, which personally as a man with huge shovel hands, I find very difficult to do compared to something like the DeepMind, which I find to be properly sized. But the technology that's in it is really not that different from the Cloud. Right, it's pretty similar. Like it's what is it? The ABS analog,
analog circuit behavior, ASB.
Yeah,
on like some FPGA chip or something.
Yeah,
I believe.
It is more or less identical. So you are essentially paying for a MIDI controller. Now I don't mind doing that. I love the Native Instruments S61 and stuff like that. Or the Native Instruments S series. I love the A series that they've done. I think that's really good. But like to package it in
80 quid keyboard extra for all the boutiques.
Yeah, I like Behringer.
Oh man! Well, I think let's move on from slagging off Roland because they do actually make some incredible products. Like the MC range, I'm absolutely behind.
Yeah,
that's super cool.
JXM doesn't seem too bad. Like to have like speakers and stuff like that.
It's pretty cool.
That seems
a lot. People are kind of slagging off that one. I'll confess, I wanted to hate it, but it does actually sound really, really good.
And again, I'll go back on myself even more. I did get a chance to try out the JU06A or that one. And I was blown away. Like, by the time... I think what really helps it is it's such a little box, but by the time you put it through big speakers, it sounds so good.
It really does.
It's really irritating.
Yeah.
And, again, to be fair against or for Roland compared to the Behringer, as someone that completely hands up isn't too into the sort of synthesizers and stuff like that, or certainly from the point of view as I haven't delved too deep into it, this is certainly going to be an education for me, but the JU06A that they've done is such a dream to program to try and get those sounds out of it and to get the sounds that you want out of it super, super quick. Whereas, playing with a DeepMind, I must admit, I kind of...
There's a bit more menu in there.
I'm not 100% subscribing through the manual, and that is really what's going to kind of...
I find it very accessible. I mean, people look at it and they think there's tons of menu diving, but there really isn't. I mean, the menus aren't deep as such. I mean,
they're mostly one layers, aren't
they?
Yeah,
I mean, there's a couple of two layer ones, but that really is about it. The majority, and they each individual part is separated, and it's got its own separate edit button. Press the edit button, you're into the menu, discrete menu for that particular thing, oscillator, LFO, whatever. And it's just, once you get the sort of hang of it, you can really steam through it.
I think that's the thing, though, is it's like once you get the hang of it, which to me is the kind of thing, whereas it was, I certainly felt with the Juno, because that we may as well kind of compare the two of them, that I wasn't kind of finding myself having to get into the hang of it too much. I could just kind of quite quickly...
Yeah, I understand that, but at the same respect, it means it doesn't have the depth of control.
True, very, very true.
That you can get with a DeepMind.
Yeah, and it comes with effects, right? The DeepMind.
DeepMind four layers of digital effects, which really, I mean, they're half decent effects as well, and then you've got a lot of control over those, and hence it's although it's Juno-esque, it's otherworldly once you layer those effects on top. So, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I like them, as you know.
Yeah, certainly. Rightfully so.
Right.
It's time. So, new section.
Focus on the Behringer announcements for this week. So
these actually, because we got a couple here. I know one's definitely this week. Is the Wasp actually this week?
Yeah, it was earlier in the week, and then Poly D came out a few days later. But yeah, they're both totally. Effectively, this last week that's passed.
Yeah, before we kind of jump into what Behringer's actually announced, we are lucky enough to know personally the man behind the DIY Wasp clone, who actually manufactures PCBs and kits that you can actually kind of make yourself. So there's an extra layer of accessibility if you're handy with a soldering iron. Mm-hmm. Jason, a friend of the Modular Cafe, a local synth meet. He makes proper touch plate keyboards, synthesizers that you can buy. He also makes the Spider sequencer for it. So it'd be really interesting. And what we could pretty easily put together is a little, so I think he's got an original. We could do an original, a clone, and a clone. Do a little side by side, which would be kind of interesting to see how well they all stack up. But what have we got from Behringer? What have they announced? I haven't even looked into it, to be honest. I've just seen it. That's it.
Yeah, so the as I say, the Wasp was announced, I would like to say, the beginning of this last week gone. So Behringer have certainly taken to doing a lot of their, apart from distributing sort of test units out to the usual suspects with the, you know, that have YouTube channels or other social media to make sure that you get that sort of coverage. They've been doing quite a lot on their own YouTube channel, and so they sort of extolled what it was, because it's not just the Wasp, it's the Wasp Deluxe.
What was the difference? Because I don't know too much about the Wasp.
I am assuming it just had, it's got slightly more functionality, but obviously here we've got the sort of the spec of the original, and to my mind that looks pretty the same. Sort of two digitally controlled oscillators. I'm assuming the Behringer are doing it in the same way, because they actually go on about the authentic reproduction of the original Deluxe or Wasp Deluxe circuitry, so they make a big thing out about that. So I can only imagine that nothing in there was particularly patented or thing. So it was obviously a free lunch for them, so to speak.
Free lunch.
But I mean, if we look at the, you know, we can look at the specs here, and it's pretty, to my mind, that's pretty the same. So as I say, what we've got, the two oscillators I've mentioned, one LFO. High and low pass filter, the arpeggiator, which is in the thing, so that might be a different. So the original's got a arpeggiator. Oh no, it's no, it's got none.
Well, yes, it's not a keyboard version, because this one is the same format as like the Neutron, the Pro one. It's that
Eurorack 3U type of format.
Yeah, obviously we're kind of lacking that touch plate. It looks like Behringer have added a notch filter in there as well, which may not have been present on the original.
I think these little modifications and sort of embellishments that they do, it's all part and parcel of obviously making the instrument slightly more interesting than the original, possibly in some respects. Yeah. But also it mostly keeps them away from litigation, because it's their design will be enough or further enough away from the original to try and avoid complications.
It works as well. It's a bit like what you said with the Odyssey that they've done. It's really important that has effects built into it, isn't it? Like with the art.
Yes, I think it certainly makes it a very interesting instrument, you know, let alone the sort of reasonable inexpensiveness of it. Mm. What I did notice when I managed to get hold of the prototype that we were lucky enough to get our hands on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I compared it to my Korg re-released ARP Odyssey, and it looks, at the first glance when you look at the Behringer, you think, oh, it's an Odyssey, it looks exactly the same. But it's not until you actually start really comparing them, A and B-ing them, and you actually realise there's the odd feature and the slight design choices that make it subtly different. And then you've got the addition of the effects and the sequencer.
Yeah, yeah.
Which makes it a much more rounded instrument in this day and age. Because, as I say, if you have an original, you have to add some effects.
Yeah,
so pedal effects,
investing in some pedals or something like
and
that.
And if you want to sequence it, you need some external sequencer to plug it in.
Did the original have MIDI, or was it you'd have to CV and gate it?
No, it's way before MIDI even exists. Gotcha. So I don't think it even had anything. Oh, DynSync, was DynSync Roland's exclusive?
I have no idea.
I don't know how it went down. But yeah, so CV was all it had, as far as I can remember. And the obviously the Korg re-release has got MIDI.
Yeah.
Other than that, it keeps, and it's got the CV, so it keeps it quite faithful. Going back to the Wasp, though, I have to say that back in the day, I was when they originally were released, I always was a bit sniffy about them because of the white, clean keyboard so forth. I was just going, you know, it just looked cheap and cheesy. And this was before it had developed its cult status, which obviously they subtly have gained over the years.
Yeah, well, if you want to get that kind of vibe, you've still actually got the Modal Sculpt. That's a touch plate keyboard. A nightmare to play, but it's a touch plate. Then also, I guess, sort of the
Microfeet
kind of, but that's like the PCB thing, so it's not quite that glossy, capacitive doodad that was going on. It's
yeah, and I think the original design decision to go in that direction was purely to cost. You know, they were trying to, it was a very much a low cost synth at the time.
British
design, right? Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got to wonder whether the... Because have they been re-released at any stage? Or
no, I think it's just clones, like sort of low number runs of like... Well, our friend Jason's done sort of PCB runs for the DIYer. I don't think anyone's done one official. Obviously, Dopha have the filter clone.
Yeah, I've got that.
That's around. It's a famously weird filter. Just does some strange things with high resonances.
Again, with a lot of the Dopha stuff, it's all nicely inexpensive. So, and
absolutely.
I've had one for quite a time. I should use it more often. I mean, any of you guys thinking you actually get a Wasp? I doubt if I'll actually get one.
There's not a, because I mean, as cool as it is seeing all these analog recreations and sort of throwbacks to some really fun old synths, what I'm personally really interested in is something just odd. So things like the Make Noise, No Coast, Bastille Castle, just strange synthesizers that have either a really odd interface that force you to really work at it to try and figure out what you can get out of it, or even Seat Lombard stuff, which I've never actually played with, the really weird modular bits with like there's no text on these panels, kind of wooden wooden things. I'm not really into these. I owned a Neutron. Which, by all accounts, is an amazing modular synthesizer, or semi-modular synth. But I think, to be honest, Andy, there'd be more kind of down, I think, your street, where obviously you're working in an environment where you might have a client that goes, we need this sound. And you go, oh, there's a plug-in, but why not hand someone an instrument to play?
Yeah, I think...
I think they're interesting.
Certainly in my line of it, I've definitely been thinking about getting a... couple of them in together. Certainly some of the classics, as it were. Certainly the some of the work that I do, the RD8 comes to mind.
Oh yeah. Well, as soon as that was announced, you could
I was so excited for that. Yeah, actually, it really irritated me. I haven't even had a chance to play it yet. But I still maintain enthusiasm for it. What else? The Odyssey. Certainly that was one way before Behringer even announced it, and we had the Korg reissue, like you said, on display, and I got to kind of play around with that. I was really kind of intrigued by it, and a friend of mine, he introduced me to LCD Sound System, and there's one particular song on it, which I will find out, but it was like, oh, you know what that is? And it's like this booming, like kind of bass synth glory thing, and it was like that's the ARP, and I was like, right, okay, I really want to get that. So that ARP has definitely been on my list for quite a while, and then it's like, the you know, it wouldn't hurt to have, you know, the something like the Model D, or the what else am I thinking of, the Juno, the DeepMind one, that would be very cool. I really like the classic stuff.
Yeah.
For me, the reason that I like it is because it's so approachable. Like, you know, obviously you were saying it's like that stuff that you really have to work in, whereas the...
Oh, that, yeah, the whole point of the why I like it is because
why you like it, because
it's
you have
so
to work
obscure.
In it. Yeah, and I really dig that. That's really cool. But for me, I kind of I like the element of programming it, and that's something, you know, that I can sit down with in my own time and work it out. But if I'm trying to get to a sound quickly, which often I find that I need to, that's where, like, having that kind of classic stuff really comes into it, because it's not as kind of that far into the kind of programming side of it. It'd be beautiful if I had, you know, 8 hours to sit down and, you know, prat about with a synthesizer in the best possible way. I would love to do that, but you don't often have it. And, you know, if you've got a session booked where you've got, you know, 2 or 3 hours to kind of come up with something that is usable, and, you know, that's, we're talking programming before you even come into playing.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean? That's where it, like, really kind of, that classic stuff really, really helps. And it's such an identifiable sound as well.
Mm.
That's the other thing. You know, you hear an 808 kick drum and you know it's an 808
you know
kick
what
drum.
You're in for,
you know what I mean? That's my kind of stance on it, certainly.
Right, well, that brings us on to the Behringer Poly D, which was announcement from Behringer that seemed to get everyone's attention. Sort of.
There was
a lot
of noise about this one, actually.
Yeah, I mean, a bit more ambitious than some of the other announcements. It's a more expensive item.
Looking, what are we talking, 5699?
I've heard 699. Mm. For this one, but we'll have to see. But I mean, generally, that's mostly quite accurate. But we'll have to see exactly.
They
because
tend to be pretty accurate with the prices that they announce, right? They don't tend to fluctuate too much from what they kind of initially hazard a guess as to how much it's going to cost to what they actually retail at. I think I've noticed that, like with the 808, the RD8 that they said they do. I remember them saying it was going to be around about the £300 mark, and if I'm not mistaken, it's 299.
It's actually 279 in a lot of places now, but I mean that it when it first came out, absolutely 299. Then, you know, people are going, "Ha ha, take our price!" You know,
yeah, they do tend to drop a little bit pretty shortly after release. As I say, you get the first batches through, and then suddenly we get into that sort of race to the bottom on pricing.
Oh, yep, standard stuff.
I mean, this interests me in more than the actual Model D, in the respect that it's physically larger. And as I say, I like a much more physically larger synth, bigger knobs, something I can get hold of, something that's...
complete instrument, though, because you've got the keyboard on this as well.
Yes, I mean, it's got a lot going for it. Doesn't have any kind of reverb, I don't believe. It's just got the chorus.
And on the sort of specs here, we've got a delay, although I don't remember... Oh, no, it's got the delay from the same delay that's in the Neutron in it, I think.
Yeah, they're sort of the Bucket Brigade
delay
technology. Doesn't say where they pulled that from. They've got a distortion circuit.
There's like the distortion delay, I think that's literally just lifted from the Neutron. I'm going to double check that while you guys
32 step sequencer
just while you're checking that LCD sound system song that I mentioned.
Oh yeah,
how did you sleep? Or how do you sleep?
I'll have a look at it.
Yeah, you should do.
Yeah.
That is a very good example of using the ARP to great effect. I think it was used quite a lot on that album as well. Church Studios, I want to say.
So they do go on about the components. So, you know, obviously they're using modern components with quite high tolerances and so forth. So they kept this one up their sleeve. So it's a kind of, it's a strange one. You know, are people going to actually use it in a polyphonic manner, or is it going to just be a bit of a, you know, you know they're going to use it in unison and really get big fat bass lines out of it?
I think, because we were talking about this earlier, actually, Pete, because it's sort of in the Korg Monopoly type architecture, if I'm right.
I'll tell you something really embarrassing. Looking into this,
yeah.
When I first saw the photo of it, I was like, oh, they've put a keyboard on the Model D.
It looks really similar.
Yeah, I mean, they've taken a lot of the circuitry across, and much larger control surface and full-size keys, which I quite like. It's full-size keys.
Yeah.
And in fact, what I quite like about a lot of these Behringer things is that they've gone for, you know, instead of going the easy option, or possibly the easy option is go for mini keys, which I detest, they go for the full-size keys, which makes them, you know, makes for quite a serious instrument.
Mm.
And I always feel even the key bed qualities...
It's
generally
not bad
quite
at all.
Yeah, they're not, you know, not awful. I mean, there's some quite leading manufacturers, and their key beds are dreadful, to say the least.
Yeah, considering I think that
a certain Red brand, I think, sometimes springs to mind on their synthesizers. Just checked, there's actually no delay, so it's the distortion that's come from the Neutron, and then they've got the chorus, which is probably just lifted from. Ooh, what's it called? But there's a Behringer. TC Electronic, which is a Behringer kind of subsidiary. June Chorus, that's what it's called. I imagine they've just lifted that and popped it straight in, because it's got, you know, the two buttons. It does the classic thing, and actually makes it a stereo synthesizer as well. So obviously you've got just kind of distortion on the mono kind of sound into the chorus, which then gives you the width on it. But no delay, sadly, because I always just want some kind of spatial effect on any kind of synth, like the Dreadbox Erebus and the Nyx are amazing for that. On what we're talking, Neutron has delay, but then obviously this, and then the regular Mold-D are just dry. And I don't have an extensive collection of any kind of effects or anything. It would just be kind of, you have to have it with the computer. You can't just sit at your synth and just go at it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, considering that they managed to put in some really nice effects in some of their other instruments, it was a shame, possibly, that it's not the end of the world. I mean, you can always stick, but it's more cost. And this is one of their more expensive keyboards. I know, so it's the 3-year warranty, so they are standing behind.
Yeah, absolutely. Is that true of really all of good. Their synths?
I'm not sure, but certainly with this one, they sort of seem to be making a big buy. And then they designed and engineered in the UK, but so I don't know if it was the same people that were behind the DeepMind that have got there.
Yeah, well, it's ever since they got, ever since they bought, what was it, Midas, a lot of their kind of reliability and build quality stuff's really started to shake off the traditional, oh, avoid Behringer, it's going to be a nightmare. They're kind of shaking that off a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people putting out some negative publicity because, as I say, they've really eaten into, because you know, if I was going to buy an Odyssey now, I wouldn't be buying the Korg one.
Mm.
Not that they're still. I don't know if the full size ones are still available.
I don't think you can really get them anymore.
But the full size one was 1400, and this is full size, and it's
was the limited edition. They kept making that mini.
Yeah, it kept going down. It became like more and more modular. I remember there was one. To be fair, I think it depended on which one you got, because there were some that you kind of came across that were about £700 or something like that.
That was the mini one, I think.
That was the mini
one?
It
had mini keys, like the same keys as the mini log.
That's it, you got it. And that, I thought, at the time, I thought that was pretty reasonable for what it was. But now, like, because of Behringer, it's just a thing.
And, I mean, the thing about the Poly-D that obviously came out this week, there's nothing really you can tangibly compare it. I mean, obviously, it's very Moog-esque and
Not much around, no.
So I can't really think.
Certainly looks very Moog.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of what they're going for, but this stranger addition of polyphony.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is another four-voice paraphonic synthesizer around. That's the Moog Matriarch, actually. Ooh, but then that is
that
also...
does look good, though.
Oh, man, I love it. But that stereo filter, stereo BBD delay, big old semi-modular thing, it's quite a different beast, and about four times the price.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, though, on a little tangent, I was really impressed with the Moog Grandmother, because what's that?
Lovely.
That's $799?
$799.
That's
really, really good
really
machine.
Good price for what you get, right?
And a real spring reverb that you can hit.
And hand built.
Yeah, well, everything Moog is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, what you don't wear is all the Behringer stuff mass produced in somewhere in Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
Wherever they fabricate.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the Moog assembly line. There's people on it. With soldering irons, so yeah.
Right, does anyone want to say any more about the Poly-D?
I want to play it. That's basically it.
So we really haven't, apart from the Behringer adverts and the other publicity, who knows when we'll actually see one of these in the flesh.
Oh, yeah, that's always the way. I mean, we've looked into it before, Pete. That was with the CS80, because we actually... I remember one day when we were just working, we were seeing, we tried to make a guess based on previous announcements and releases when we might see it.
Little algorithm.
Yeah, so we thought it might be about 3 years before we saw a CS80, and that must have been well over 6 months ago. So it's definitely going to be a good over two years before we see anything actually from the CS80. It's a big old synthy boy.
I wonder if you can give it the... tribute band analogy. It's a lot easier because you're effectively copying something, you know, you've got to reproduce it. It's not like you're trying to
reinvent the wheel.
But that's the difference between a good tribute band and a bad one is how well you reproduce it.
Yes, like, exactly.
That's the difficult part.
Well, I mean,
because you could slap something together and kind of be a little bit CS80, but you know, with all of the other stuff, it seems like they've gone for accuracy to a degree.
Yeah. Well, the other options are, I mean, there may be others, but the ones I'm aware of, obviously, a real CS80, some eye watering a large amount of money.
About $40,000?
No, I don't know.
It's got to be.
They're frighteningly expensive.
I think it's over $20,000 for these kind of things.
And then the other option would be the Deckard's Dream.
That's it. Yeah.
Which in itself, if you get one fully assembled, is not that cheap either. It's about
how much is that?
3.5.
That's not too bad.
That sort of thing. Once you've
build it yourself, if you like, that's kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean, even the kit isn't. Just the circuit boards is $999, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've met one before in real life. And I mean, it's a serious piece of equipment, you know, like rack mounted kind of thing. But the question would be is if you can get your hands on a proper like MPE compatible controller, because what have we actually got? And spoiler alert for the next section, actually. But there's obviously the Roly stuff. What else can you buy nowadays that is polyphonic aftertouch type stuff? The Harkin things?
Yeah, I mean, very, very specialist, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to go... if you had a Roly, you'd have to go for like a weird like MIDI conversion to get it to work. I don't even know how they could do it. Either way, polyphonic aftertouch is hard. Behringer, good luck with the CS80 clone there.
Right, I think it's time that we spoke about the Expressive E
Osmos.
I knew I was going to pronounce it wrong.
It's not been around for very long. Andy knows nothing about this, which is super exciting for him.
Absolutely no idea.
I think Pete and I, we're excited. Here is a picture, Andy. Obviously, we'd definitely recommend our listeners go and watch and enjoy Cuckoo's video on this. He's really made it sing. I know there's some. They've announced this and done some videos with some really famous keyboard players. I wasn't impressed. Cuckoo's video really makes this thing happen.
Is that the one he did when he just does the sound?
No, this was just the general Cuckoo one. But
okay. I'm going to imply to our listeners that you should, from this point, get a photo up of it, because I'm going to start asking some questions having a look at it immediately. The first one that springs to mind, now that's obviously a keyboard, a regular keyboard. Above it, now, is that the standard thing? Is it, like, touch-sensitive? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, well, closest to a degree, the closest analogy you could fall would be a Seaboard Rise.
Right? That's what it looked like to me, yeah.
Yeah, it's using similar technology in some respects.
Yeah, so, to be honest, this is... When I saw it, I thought, wow, this is what Roly should have done from the beginning. So, it's... obviously, it's all still solid kind of material, so it's a solid keybed. You can touch the thing, but you've still got that kind of... it's like, imagine aftertouch, but it happens kind of all the way through the travel of the key and where aftertouch normally is.
Right.
So you can do that kind of strike thing that you can on Roly stuff. Yep. So you tap it and you get a really nice zingy kind of attack. You can really slowly lower the keys and you'll get lovely swells. But what a lot of people will sort of do if they've come from the guitar world, they'll press a key, wiggle their finger right and left and be like, oh, why is there no vibrato? That's what you can do on this. The key, you can move it left and right. And the complaint I've always had, being a terrible keyboard player and trying to play Roly stuff, is you try and play a chord and the whole thing's out of tune.
Sure.
On this, as you press the keys, it's all going to be in tune until you move them.
Right.
And you've still got that each key press has its own separate pitch bend and things.
Killer.
It's so expressive. It's amazing.
But it's a standalone synth.
Mm.
That was going to be my next question. There's no way that I can import, like, send that data through to any other synth. And
if it supports MPE. So the Deckard's Dream, who we were speaking about just a little bit ago, that would absolutely, you can control it from this.
What about SOSynths?
If they support it, yeah. Because it'll have a USB.
Anything that springs to mind with that we might...
I don't know. It'd probably work with Equator, although Roly would probably hate you. I don't actually know of any MPE-compatible soft synths off the top of my head, but it's just MIDI data. I mean, manufacturers could very reasonably implement it.
But yeah, it's got a really good... there's two factors to it. There's one, the keybed itself, which has got the interesting sort of functionality that you wouldn't get with a normal keybed.
Yeah.
And then on top of it, you've got this very interesting sound engine.
Yeah, you've got to do your homework on that video. It sounds unreal.
Yeah, if you want those sounds that you just can't get from anything else, those weird, haunting, you know, the sounds
that
you've always...
atmospheric?
Yeah, very atmospheric, and especially with the expressiveness that you can imply in your playing as well.
It's like a pad on crack.
Yeah, I mean, it's just that it's hard to describe, but apart from sounding quite haunted in a really good way.
Yeah,
I mean, just the whole thing. I have to get one.
Yeah. And how much is that going to set us back?
Well, about 1,700
right
retail, but there's the pre-orders are open now. I think it's like 1,049 will be the total cost. But what was you say, like two?
I think I think it's €299 to place a deposit on it.
Right.
And then the subsequent, when it gets released, which I believe is early next year.
Okay.
I can't remember the actual release date. As I say, very interested. I really think it's I've never been quite as interested in the last year or so with something that's been released. It's just suddenly...
Fair enough.
I think it's going to bring something to my... studio that I haven't got.
Yeah.
Whereas quite a few things, you get them and it's just more of the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is really interesting. I'm potentially going to pre-order one to get the advantage of the discount. I mean, I was kind of slightly intrigued with their previous offering, which I can't remember what it was called.
The Touché.
Yes.
That's really cool. That was basically if a pitch and mod wheel was good. And accessible to, because there's a certain learning curve to get good results out of a pitch bend wheel, to be honest.
Certainly.
Mod wheel, easy enough. Getting a good sound out of a pitch bend is kind of difficult. Some joysticks are nice, but the they just did an excellent job on the Touché. It's just the way it kind of responds physically, the kind of springiness to it. It was just a really easy way to get kind of more expression out of a synth sound.
Yeah.
But then on this Osmos, you can basically do that per note. So for people who are already great keyboard players, they've just got so much more expressive options.
Because, I mean, the thing that blew my mind with the way that this kind of technology is developing, I always remember the... Now, this is with the Roly, but it's obviously going to show how the technology is expanding. It was the Jimi Hendrix video. Let's see if we can attach a link to it or something
like that. What, the dude, playing Hendrix licks.
Like playing Little Wing.
Oh,
he did the solo
for
that. And I was just blown away.
Yeah. Well, the traditional piano keyboard's always lacking. It's those all the tiny inflections that have always been available to the guitar.
It's adding
naturally.
That extra expression that's not done just dynamically. Like, that's the thing. I mean, some of the best keyboard or pianists, being able to add that expression through dynamics is quite incredible to watch.
Yeah, the amount of expression they get out of literally volume and timing.
That's but to be able to add that kind of, you know, notation, I suppose, is really cool. Really, really cool.
Yeah, and I mean, I haven't heard too much from the synth bits on the Haken keyboards, but the sound engine's done by Haken Audio. They have their own continuum range, which is basically, it's like a neoprene sheet with markings for the keys on it, and that's the same kind of thing. Polyphonic aftertouch, expressive.
Yeah, I believe some of the underlying technology of this is using their technology or using these techniques. Yeah. There is another, because Cuckoo, certainly the video I saw on YouTube, on Cuckoo's channel, was him just demonstrating, doing sound demonstrations and not saying, and it was just sound only. He introduces it and then he goes on to just go through sort of various sound sets and it's just otherworldly. And that really did, I just had it playing in the background and it's one of those, I'm going to get one. I mean, the C-board, I was never really, you touch them, they feel weird. It's a bit of a strange...
kind of irresistible. It's like a stress ball, right?
And I mean, obviously, if someone was very adept, they could do great things. But the way the keys had that sort of rolling kind of thing, you could sort of really fall off the edge of the key. Where this is...
Well, they call them key waves.
Yeah.
That's what they call them.
So you could easily, if you're not careful, go out of tune in a horrible way if you were not that adept, because you could literally slip off, because it's continuous, isn't it?
Well, that's all mine was. It was just, now everything's out of tune. Try and put a chord on the things.
Yeah. But with this, because it's still got traditional keyboard mechanism, it's not like you're going to fall onto the adjacent key or something like that. And
it was especially bad on the rollies between the black and the white keys. There were sort of that corner where they meet is just really vague in terms of kind of muscle memory and accidentally bleeding into the next semitone.
Yeah, no, I do remember
so
that.
So to a degree, in a term that I used earlier, I think that they expressively might have shot Rowley's fox here.
Oh, yeah.
Well, again, it's one of those things. You're kind of waiting for it to happen. You know, Rowley have dominated it for such a long time, and it wasn't until the touche that came out. That
there
was
wasn't
like,
much
okay,
else.
Right, then that's something that's kind of building on that technology and that kind of thing. And by the looks of it, this Osmos is really starting to kind of get there. I do like the kind of thing with it obviously having the kind of regular key bed that you can just use it in that sense if you want
You can absolutely disable all the cool stuff. And
yeah,
just
I think you can lock it into a conventional thing. But I don't know why you'd want to, because it's going to be... I feel that I'm not a great keyboard player, but I think I'm going to be able to achieve expression, as you say, with really good keyboard players can impart that expression just with, as you say, timing and...
Timing, note choice and volume. That's literally all the options you've got.
And they can make, you know, we all know what it's like to, when it's a really good musician, especially a really good keyboard player, they just can just... make the thing sing.
Yeah.
No matter what it was, whether it's just a conventional analog acoustic piano through to a whole variety of other
piano, I love that.
Yeah, analog piano.
What kind of filter have you got?
But yeah, I'm pretty sold on this, and I think I'm definitely going to get one.
I really want to try one at some point. I'll probably suck using it, but I'm really interested to see how it feels.
And as I say, it's not just the expressive nature. It's definitely the... And then I really advocate listening to the Harkin Audio sound engine. Mm. Listening to some demos, and it definitely sounds that... obviously, it's digital, but... the combination of the expression and those type of sounds is just going to bring forth something that I don't currently have.
I'm hoping we see it on stages as well, like a real performance instrument.
Yeah,
it's cool. Because there's not a lot of that. Has anyone seen a Rowley on a stage before?
I have, actually.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Oh, here was me expecting a no.
No,
what
no,
was
I
this?
Have. But it wasn't live.
Oh,
it was actually in the film La La Land.
What?
Ryan Gosling is
plays a Rowley.
Plays a Rowley in one of the bits where he, I suppose, sells out. And
I think I've got to watch La La Land just
La
for
La
the Rowley.
La La Land is a banging film, to be fair.
Yeah,
but there is a Rowley on it, and I remember there are a couple of ones. Like obviously, being in the thing that we are, but not just for. Not just for when you're live, and obviously you see things, it's like, oh, he's using a such and such.
Oh, I can't, I hate that reflex.
Me too, yeah. Me too. But it's in films as well, where it's like, oh, they're using such and such. But yeah, Ryan Gosling, I think the two, Core Kronos for the rehearsal, this is really sad, Core Kronos for the rehearsal, I think there was a Nord on stage in the Rowley, and yeah, they used that, and I was like, oh, fair enough.
Yeah.
But the big one recently, which I think was out on Thursday, I'm almost embarrassed to admit it, but I was watching The Apprentice, and it was the task was to it was to take a band and have a song that they'd go on to sell to an advertisement company, which was, you know, relatively interesting for The Apprentice. And yeah, it was kind of going through that when they were in the studios, and it's like, oh, that's a Neumann, oh, that's Pro Tools, that's Logic. Yeah, Logic. You know, it's just one of those, like you say, it's just a reflex. And I kind of sat there watching it with my missus. She's like, I didn't know you actually knew about a lot of this stuff. I'm like, yeah, there are things that I do know about.
A bit spooky, because she must be fully aware of what you do for.
Oh, 100%, but it never really. She's an accountant, so yeah, there's, so you know, yeah. I kind of. Oh,
suddenly
yeah.
Have a conversation about double entry bookkeeping. Oh, she'd be right on.
I was just there, like, yeah, I use Excel, and she's like, yeah, but do you use Excel? Do you know Excel?
Quickly, while we're still vaguely
not
on the
really.
Sin yes, topic, there is. I was doing a bit of a binge on researching the Buchla Music Easel. There is a film called "We Are Your Friends," where Zac Efron handles a Buchla Music Easel, and it's the worst thing I've ever seen. You got to check it out. Just on YouTube, Zac Efron Buchla scene. It hurts me deeply. But there you go. The Buchla Music Easel has been been in films.
You can just imagine, like, whoever it is, because I assume the, you know, using the Korg, because, like, in the film, right, that it's obviously product placement.
Hmm.
It must be, because it's like, you know, you notice that, right, that's not just a keyboard. You will notice that is a Korg Kronos. You will notice that is a Rolly. And you can just kind of imagine the rep there or something like that, like, right, okay, so this is what that does. And it's like, does it matter? Nah, not really. Like, it's just
play. Gotta watch La La Land now.
It is a good film. It is a good film. Heartbreaking, but good.
Okay, well, I think that really does it for this week. So thank you very, very much for anyone that has cared to listen all the way through, or even listen at all.
Yeah.
And we are hopefully intending to do this on a regular weekly basis, and just see how it develops.
Yeah.
Thank
you
very
much. See you next time.
Cheers. Bye-bye.